broadcasting live from the beautiful Cobb Galleria Center in Atlanta, Georgia, at TAG Summit 2020. Now, here are your Business Radio X hosts.
All right, Stone Peyton Lee Cantor here with you this afternoon. We are broadcasting live from Cobb Galleria Center for TAG Summit 2020. We're kind of hitting our home stretch here, Lee. I think we've got one or two segments to go, but I think this may be the highlight of the day. This is going to be a fantastic segment. Please join me in welcoming to the broadcast Mr. Justin Varghese. How are you, man?
I'm doing fantastic. Definitely happy to be here at TAG and happy to be on Business X Radio as well. It's been good times. You know, the flight from Dallas to Atlanta, a little choppy, not going to lie. Not going to lie. Those tailwinds were not ultra favorable upon takeoff. But, you know, ever since after landing, of course, the city's been hospitable as always, had some great food in me. So I'm feeling great.
So now you know that we get Dallas's weather like 2 days later. So this all started with you.
That's right.
My apologies for that. Though, to be fair, I will say that Dallas has probably the most unpredictable weather of anywhere that I've ever been. Just to put things in perspective, a couple months ago, it was, I think, in the 70s or 80s, a Friday night, and we had a massive tornado. And then Saturday morning, it was in the 30s and snowing.
Yeah. Those are always my favorite. Well, Justin, you're here with DreamHack. Tell us a little bit about DreamHack.
Yeah, so DreamHack is the world's premier gaming lifestyle festival.
Is that what you and your parents say, or is that like the real, the world has determined that to be so? Or both?
Column A and column B for sure. I'd like to think that even though I wasn't necessarily the doctor that my parents wanted me to be, I still have their support for sure. But yeah, no, it's absolutely phenomenal what DreamHack is doing in this space. Even before I was involved with the company, my start in the esports space was as a play-by-play commentator. So when I found out that DreamHack was coming to the States for the first time, it was actually a goal of mine to do commentary there.
Right.
You know? But it's grown so much. It had such humble beginnings back when it started off about 25 years ago. It was just a group of friends meeting up in a cafeteria for a weekend of gaming, hacking, and coding. And since then, it's grown to an astronomical size. Last year, our team did 15 shows in 9 different countries with an estimated global attendance upwards of 400,000 people. And we're really happy that we're now getting ready for our 4th year in Atlanta, which is going to be outstanding. The most recent Atlanta show was a ton of fun for sure. We're really happy to have the city's blessings, both from a governmental perspective, actually getting a proclamation that declared DreamHack Day, the day that we opened our Atlanta festival to celebrate our 25th year of operating. And also from the general public as well, as we saw a massive growth for our show.
So now for the people who have never attended, walk me through what it's like to attend DreamHack.
Yeah, so DreamHack within the grand spectrum of everything esports is very unique. I'd say that a lot of esports tend to operate and function more like a concert in the sense that there's one main stage and everybody in the room is really there to see that one particular artist, right? So something like Overwatch League, for instance, it's kind of like a concert in that way in the sense that it has one main stage and everyone in the room is there to watch Overwatch. Mm-hmm. LCS, same thing except with League of Legends. DreamHack is different because instead of having one main stage, because we're more like a festival, we actually tend to have anywhere from 7 to 12 different main stages.
And all having same time?
Yes, simultaneously.
Wow.
Simultaneously. It's pretty ludicrous. So you'll basically have a really good understanding of the entire spectrum of esports, not just necessarily a tier one esport, but even grassroots esports. I mean, it's not uncommon for us to have a massive Counter-Strike tournament with a quarter of $1 million on the line and 16 of the best teams in the world competing over that, right next to a fighting game stage, which is a much more grassroots group of gamers who are still ultra passionate and extremely technical and knowledgeable in regards to the execution of their craft. So at the end of the day, we're all about just showcasing everything gaming and putting it under one roof. And for us, especially as we're looking at the future, it's about bringing more folks in technology, sports and entertainment, music, film, television, all to the same table to encourage creativity and cultivate change using gaming as a conduit for that change.
And then gaming, you know, people do it for entertainment, but now it's evolving into education. The usage of gaming is way broader than just, you know, a bunch of people killing zombies or something, right?
Oh, absolutely. Gaming has actually been directly linked to increasing STEM programs as well, funny enough, right? There's a direct correlation between people who are invested and interested in playing games or participating in esports, be it at a collegiate, high school, or even younger level, to eventually going on and making moves in STEM fields. Mm-hmm. So for me, one of the beauties of gaming, beyond it just being a ton of fun, is also the actual educational and social good implications that scaling gaming at a massive size, especially from a student perspective, is incredible. Because the reality is that if you look at how our school systems are set up now, they work really well for 5 to 10% of people there.
Right.
Right. And the other 90 to 95% of folks are, at best, apathetic and at worst, completely disinterested and removed.
Right. They checked out.
Exactly. So gaming is really good because now you have a way where, let's say maybe you're not the most physically inclined student. Now you have a way to compete, work on your teamwork, communication skills, and problem solving all in one while also feeling more tied to the community as well as the school system itself. And whether it's something as simple as using Minecraft EDU to help teach physics to at-risk youth, or even going all the way to getting into like a high school esports league or something like that, there is a lot of opportunity in regards to how gaming can be used for a ton of growth and development, especially for our youth.
Right. You see that a lot of young people aren't engaged in school and they kind of blame it on this short attention span and they can't focus and all this stuff. But somehow they're able to focus and play video games for 6 hours straight. You know, if something captivates their attention, is compelling, they'll be as focused and as engaged as humanly possible. So it's just a matter of bringing the curriculum and the education into a realm that they can deal with and want to play with.
Oh, absolutely. For me, what's really interesting is that I feel like if you took somebody like Simple, who's considered to be one of the best Counter-Strike players in the world, and put him in a room with LeBron James, for instance,
right?
Even though they play different games, I feel like you could have a very unique conversation about mastery, right?
Right.
At the end of the day, LeBron and Simple are both constantly solving problems, whether it's passing a defender, getting a rebound, or hitting that one precise shot that a player like Simple needs to, or LeBron as well, right? And how they have this level of mastery to now it's situational awareness and how the perspective on how they view life as well as games and problem solving is at such an incomprehensible level for us mere mortals that it makes me really think that going back to schools, for instance, somebody who may be underperforming in the funnels that traditional schooling has set up but is excelling in gaming may be robbing us of a future visionary.
Right. So. And that because the people who play at the highest level, they're picking up cues and information from all different subtle things that a regular person just can't comprehend. I used to be involved in tennis, and they say that a recreational tennis player is like looking at two things when a person serves, and a professional is looking at like 25 things. You know, it's a different way of seeing the same exact thing. And at the highest level, that's what these people are doing.
Exactly.
So now for you with DreamHack, what's your role primarily nowadays?
Yeah, so I'm the marketing manager for North America. A lot of my role revolves around building relationships, especially in the cities, and regions that we have our shows. So in the United States, we currently have three festivals. We just finished our first festival in Anaheim. The Anaheim Festival always takes place typically around February or early March. We're now getting ready for our second festival in Dallas, which is going to be taking place Memorial Day weekend. And we're getting ready for our fourth festival in Atlanta. So, my role, like I said, is just all about just building those relationships and trying to see who else we can bring to the table and how we can have mass adoption from a city perspective, as well as from a regional and national perspective as well.
Now, the constituents, you're trying to recruit the players to participate. That's part of it. Or do they kind of, there's tournaments to kind of winnow them to the event?
Yeah. So it's a little bit of everything, right? We definitely have a ton of tournaments that players can participate in, of course. Whether they are top-level professionals or people who just picked up the game, we have a variety of different tournaments, whether they're invitational, aimed only at the top 0.5%, or if they're open bracket, where you will get the top talent, but also maybe somebody who just started playing the game. There's also the element of bringing people who maybe aren't interested in competing, but are just really interested in gaming in general, whether they're participating in our BYOC, our LAN area, whether they're diving into the latest and greatest indie games, or even if they're sitting there and actually watching these professionals compete on the main stage. We've made it so that there really is something for everybody here at DreamHack.
So you can go just as an observer and just wander around and just watch people play games.
100%.
Percentage of the audience is that?
That's hard to say, but you'd be really surprised. I'd say that our Atlanta show had 36,000 attendees. I'd say that maybe a tenth of those were actually competing and the rest were spectating, which is really, really cool to think about, for sure. I think that it's kind of the nature of how things are moving as well, as esports is more and more becoming spectator sports. But that, again, is the unique driver behind our show, is that not only is this a place where you can just watch the pros, you can actually have a chance to compete against them as well. And think, you know, equating that back to traditional sports, like, think about how hard it is for you to play a pickup game with LeBron James,
right?
Let alone watch him practice. But that, again, is the beauty of esports and gaming as a whole, is that those barriers are totally squashed thanks to events like ours, thanks to streaming services like Twitch, etc.
And then if people aren't here in Atlanta when it goes on, can they tune in and watch it anywhere in the world?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. We have streams for almost everything that's happening at the show, whether it's a Counter-Strike tournament, a fighting game tournament, or even the concerts that we have at night. They can all be accessed online through Twitch.
And then, so there's games happening, there's music, and is there still hacking going on?
You know, we did do a hackathon. We did do a hackathon at our show in Dallas last year, you know.
Do you do that, like, for nonprofits or gaming industry? So what's kind of the thing you're hacking?
Well, we try to focus it around innovation in the gaming space as a whole, right? I think that where gaming is right now and where esports is cool. You know, gaming is by far the largest entertainment medium now, to the point where if you take film and music and put them together, gaming is still bigger.
Right.
But especially when we're talking about something like esports, I don't even feel like it's a baby. I think it's still a fetus at this point, right? Mm-hmm. And so there's the future has not yet been determined, and where we are as a group is not set in stone by any means. So we always try to make sure that we can figure out and enable the next movers and shakers in our space as well, because that's the only way that we can scale esports, which is right now around a $1 billion industry, to $100 billion and beyond.
So now, having DreamHack in Atlanta in November, that's not an accident, I'm sure, because Atlanta has a robust technology community. There's gaming community here as well. How did you leverage TAG and the Atlanta technology community to kind of get the word out about DreamHack and to really get everybody involved and excited about it happening here?
That's a really good question. a lot of it just comes down to our relationships that we've been able to build here. Heather, for instance, at TAG is absolutely incredible. Her and Kelly were connected with me through our PR person, Melissa Sanders, who's an Atlanta local. Mm-hmm. You know, the first step of our collaboration was pretty simple. It was just making sure all TAG members were able to come to the show and secure discounted tickets on top of that. But again, as we're talking about kind of the vision of DreamHack 2025 and bringing all these different centers and folks of creativity and innovation to the table, technology is a huge part of that. So things are very simple now from a collaboration perspective, but I am really eager and earnest to see kind of how we can work more intimately together for sure to really take things to the next level here.
Now, you spoke today about gaming and esports. What was that talk about?
Yeah. So it was basically just a primer of sorts on the gaming and esports space.
You're still in that kind of education mode when it comes to esports, right? That maybe they don't understand the scope and what it could be.
Yeah. You know, the nice thing is I remember whenever I started working in this space back in 2014, the question I always got was, what's that? And it is a breath of fresh air now that things have been a little bit more established, that the question I get is, how do I get involved?
Right.
There still is a massive education component. It's not uncommon for people who especially are more in more sales capacities to hear, oh, esports, you mean like Ninja? It's like, well, not quite. That's more like an entertainer. That's more like an entertainer within the cosmos of gaming and as a whole. Esports is an entirely different beast.
Right.
But there is still definitely a big educational aspect of it. Though what we are seeing is the folks that we are targeting are now much more receptive to it. That's why in particular, if you look at kind of the brand partners that are jumping into the space, it's actually shifted pretty drastically. I mean, back in the day, having Monster as a primary sponsor of DreamHack, that makes sense. Corsair, who does headsets and things like that, that makes sense. But now we're starting to have non-endemic and endemic adjacents actually buying in heavily as well. So we just announced that the U.S. Navy, for instance, is one of our big sponsors. They took their $20 million spend that they would typically allocate for television advertising and reduced it to zero and wow, reallocated it within the gaming and esports space because they recognize we need to reach 18 to 26 or 18 to 32-year-olds or 36-year-olds. And the best way to do that, pound for pound, is not through television ads that everybody skips.
Right.
Considering the fact that most folks those days are cord cutters anyways, it's through gaming and esports, right? Chipotle came in last year as well, which was fantastic. AT&T. So things are moving for sure. I think that there's still a lot of education to be had on both sides, especially in regards to how brands can find success year over year by taking advantage of esports and gaming's capabilities to the fullest of extent and not just looking at it from one thin vertical, getting a little bit more granular as well in regards to the different segments of 18 to 25 that, say, League of Legends makes up versus something like fighting games makes up, right? Right.
And it might be the same age, but there could be it's a totally different person.
Exactly. Fighting games, for instance, typically tend to skew more favorably towards minorities and lower income folk than say something like League of Legends or Counter-Strike. And I think that the brands that understand this intimately well are willing to roll up their sleeves and get really deep into the weeds in regards to demos are the brands that are going to win really big. I mean, even from a technology perspective, last year, for Dream League, which is one of our premier Dota events, SAP was a sponsor, and they were powering the statistics behind it.
Right.
So tying it back into technology, there's a ton of opportunities here for the right tech companies to come in. It's just about doing so in an organic way that provides value to the end user at the end of the day.
Right. It has to be elegant, and it has to be authentic. And we're just beginning to kind of connect dots in this space. They're not there yet, but now with the help of you and your team, you can help them make them aware of, hey, you're missing an opportunity. This is kind of the early, like you said, the early stages of this, and you can really get in and really build that foundation that's going to pay off for years if you do this right.
Exactly. I think that one case that I think is really fitting is when you look at something like Jack in the Box, right? So if Jack in the Box came out and said, hey, guys, we're one of the primary sponsors of the NFL, that's cool, right? But they instead decided to be one of the primary sponsors of the Dallas Fuel, which is Dallas's Overwatch League team. And it was so funny, like, going on Twitter, being like, seeing all the comments and stuff, like, that's just like, oh, I really don't even like Jack in the Box, but I just ordered 50 tacos because exactly. You're supporting my, you know, right. The brand affinity that you get right now.
They don't understand that until they take the leap.
Exactly.
And then they're like, why didn't I do this last year?
Yeah. And that's the beautiful part right now is we're kind of in that unique space where people are starting to wake up, and also the brand impact of coming in as a non-endemic or endemic adjacent partner is still going to be absolutely massive. I think that it's not gonna, even if it's not going to be as monumental in the future necessarily, it's still going to be hyper valuable because, again, it's targeting the exact demographics that almost every company needs in order to thrive and survive in this decade and well beyond.
Well, if somebody wanted to learn more about DreamHack, 2020 in November, what's the best way to do it if you're here in Atlanta?
Yeah, you can go to dreamhack.com for details on all of our festivals. Tickets aren't available yet for the Atlanta show, but if you go to dreamhack.com/Atlanta, you can sign up for our mailing list there and also catch some great highlights from our show in 2019. Definitely looking to up the ante for sure for 2020. Like I said, we're really grateful for all the partners that we have, for the buy-in from the city of Atlanta, as well as from the state of Georgia, and of course the communities here that continue to allow us to do what we do year over year.
Good stuff, Justin. Thank you so much for sharing your story.
Thank you.
All right, this is Lee Cantor for Stone Payton. We'll be back in a few at Tag Summit 2020.